Case number 07-5200, William A. Davey, Jr., Appellant v. Central Intelligence Agency. Mr. Lessard for the appellant, Mr. Birch for the appellee.
Good morning, Your Honors. Jim Lessard representing Appellant William Davey. This is a Freedom of Information Act request. My client, William Davey, in 1993, submitted a request pro se for records pertaining to two CIA codename projects, Operation QK Enchant and ZR Cliff. The CIA denied his request on grounds that it could invoke the Glomar response. It refused to confirm or deny the existence of the records, even though some records relating to those projects had been released under the JFK Act. 6 years later, as the statute of limitations was running, the CIA also denied an appeal by Davey. At that point, Mr. Davey, who had been unable to afford an attorney, retained me because I was willing to take the case on a complete contingency. After suit was filed, significant information was obtained. Davey then moved for an award of attorney's fees, and the court denied it, ruling that he was not eligible for attorney's fees. Davey appealed. This court reversed and remanded. On remand, the district court ruled that Davey was not entitled to fees. The issue before the court is whether the district court abused its discretion in so ruling. It's an issue of critical importance to the viability of the Freedom of Information Act because the attorney fees provision is the primary means of enforcing the act. The district court clearly abused its discretion. It based its ruling essentially on a finding that Davey had a commercial interest in pursuing the records that he sought. In fact, there was no basis in the record for that conclusion. And the district court disregarded the legal standard for making that determination. He ignored the fact that Davey is a member of a preferred category under the criteria that are used in making determinations of whether or not to whether or not a FOIA plaintiff is entitled to fees.
And the preferred category is?
The preferred category is, at its core, it is people who are engaged in dissemination of information to the public. That includes
everybody that has a computer and gets on a blog.
I don't think anyone has gone that far yet, but it includes certainly.
So all these mushy factors are from the from the Senate?
The Senate report on the 1974 amendments, yes. And it includes authors, which Mr. Davey is. It includes scholarly interests. Mr. Davey's book is a scholarly work. It includes public interest organizations who intend to disseminate information. Pardon?
Who doesn't it?
Well, it doesn't include commercially persons who have a commercial interest.
Why should the Washington Post Company be treated any differently than Monsanto Corporation?
Well, that's a separate. That's not the issue in this case because we don't have an organization with that type of resources in front of the court. But the answer is that Congress felt it important enough to encourage.
Well, I don't know what Congress thought. The writer of the Senate committee report thought something, I guess.
Well, that reflects Congress. Congress took that into consideration.
It most certainly does not. No.
Pardon?
It most certainly does not.
Well, it's the only tangible evidence we have of what was before Congress and what Congress was considering when it voted in favor of the amendments. And Congress...
I agree with you that these factors have been embodied in judicial decisions. So, you know, you're on solid ground in arguing for them. And I'm kind of beating a dead horse.
And I think that clearly indicates that the district court abused its discretion because it did not ignore that solid body of settled law. And I would point out that its ruling is also inconsistent because...
Well, the district court said that your client had a commercial interest because he's an author. Is that the idea?
Essentially, that was the basis for it. The only evidence in the record that related to any commercial...
You know, the old line from Samuel Johnson, which is, no man but a blockhead ever wrote except for money.
Well...
But your client was, but is there evidence indicating that by the time he received this information, he had already published his book?
That I believe is true. He has another book that is due out shortly, and that the information will be in that book.
Are there any circumstances, as you look at the statute, think about these standards, are there any circumstances under which it would not be an abuse of discretion for a district court to deny fees to a someone pursuing a scholarly interest?
To someone pursuing a scholarly interest, I suppose there could be. I don't think of them at the moment. I mean,
set aside factor four for a minute.
I mean, pardon?
I assume it could be denied under factor.
Under
four.
Yes,
but
I certainly.
Set aside factor four.
Set aside factor four. Yeah. I think it would. Well,
under your theory, any university-based scholar or any other scholar for that matter, using FOIA to do research to publish a book would be could not be denied fees. Is that your theory?
I think it would be difficult. I don't know that it would necessarily be impossible. The language in the Senate report says that a person who qualifies under the first criterion, the public benefit criteria, would ordinarily be.
Suppose, for example, are the resources available to the scholar relevant? I mean, suppose, for example, the scholar were someone who, you know, had published many best-selling books based on his research and, you know, made millions of dollars on
it. I think it would not be dispositive. I think, to get back to the previous question, now that I'm thinking it through, that certainly under the first criterion, the public benefit criterion, a person who is a scholar could lose on that element, and that's the most important of the four criterion.
How would someone lose on that?
Pardon?
How would someone lose on that?
A scholar who was requesting information that was of trivial importance.
Uh-huh. Or I suppose a scholar who had a business.
The scholar had a business interest maybe
But all right, fine. But those are the only exceptions. Those are well taken. I understand you. But other than stuff like that.
Other than the stuff, the language is that the language in the Senate report is that ordinarily a person who qualifies under one, and that would include generally this preferred category, they are ordinarily entitled to an award of fees. It doesn't say that they automatically are, and we have the tax analyst case for an example where that was not true.
Now, if we were to agree with you, do we have to remand this again? Does this have to be remanded for the district court to rebalance the factors?
I don't think you have to remand it on the issue of the balancing of the factors.
Why is that?
Pardon?
Why?
Well, because this is before the court on de novo review, and
we review it for abuse of discretion?
You do review it for abuse of discretion. We find abuse of discretion. I believe that there are cases which this court has gone ahead and made ordered that the fees be awarded. I can't cite one at the moment, but I think that's the case. The only reason that it might have to be remanded is for the additional time that has been spent since the court denied the fee award on entitlement grounds. But I suppose this court could seek counsel to provide that to this court and make the ruling.
You want us to do that?
Pardon?
You want us to do that?
Well, I don't. I'm not saying that you should. And there's some.
You want us to look through your time records?
I don't mind if you look through my time records. I have no problem.
Well, suppose we did send that back. I assume then you would be entitled to fees for the amended complaint, right?
Yes.
And for negotiations over the stipulated order.
Yes.
Anything else?
Yes, there was a cross motions for summary judgment.
You lost that.
No. Technically, yes, we lost the motion,
You technically lost.
Well, okay, we lost, but. Yes. Okay. Okay, I'll concede that we lost.
So you weren't the prevailing party on that?
No, that's it depends how you define prevailing, in the sense that
did the
work on the cross motion for summary judgment lead to further disclosures? Yes, they did. The CIA disclosed some more information after the cross motion.
Not because of prevailing on its motion for summary judgment.
No, not because we
It didn't disclose any of those documents, did it?
Pardon? I think what it did was it caused a fear that they would lose on the summary judgment with respect to those documents, and they disclosed additional documents.
You mean, having won on the motion for summary judgment, they disclosed others because they feared they might lose that summary judgment motion?
My recollection is that it was before they were awarded summary judgments, after the motions were filed. After the motions were argued. That's my recollection.
All right.
Yeah.
Time's expired. We'll give you
All right. I will. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
May it please the Court, Alan Birch on behalf of the United States. Mr. Davey acknowledged in his brief, the case is governed by the abuse of discretion standard. The FOIA statute says that the district court may award fees to a party that has substantially prevailed. This court has already held that Mr. Davey has substantially prevailed, and so the analysis shifts to the word may, and that is how we get the discretionary test that the court applied here. There's no question that it was the correct test.
There's a different test. Apparently, for almost every the federal government or the federal law, the U.S. Code has tons of fee shifting statutes, right? And substantially prevailed has a uniform meaning as a result of Buchanan and some other Supreme Court cases. But so far as I can tell, there's no uniform test for determining once an individual has been declared eligible.
Right.
Or whether a court should award the attorney's fees, despite being eligible is not enough.
Right.
All these little tests for each different little fee shifting statute.
I feel your pain, Your Honor. It's a lot of work to do for the.
Well, let's think. I mean, one way to think about this is, given the factual findings the district court made,
right,
does the standard of review make any difference? So let me ask you about two of them, okay?
Okay, sure.
One of his fact findings was that the requester's interest was, quote, clearly commercial.
Right, right, Your Honor.
Okay. It's uncontested, right, that this plaintiff filed the original request pro se because he didn't have a lawyer, couldn't afford one, right?
That's correct.
Okay. It's also uncontested that he waited for 6 years because he couldn't afford a lawyer, right? He filed the new suit.
I'm not sure that that's uncontested, but...
Well, you didn't contest his allegation and his complaint about that.
Okay.
He filed this suit in 2000.
That's right.
Because he could only get a lawyer who would do it on a contingency basis, right?
That's right. That's in his declaration.
He didn't receive any funds from this secondhand selling on Amazon, right?
That and I don't think is supported.
Well, we know the amount he received was, quote, minuscule, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor. Okay.
So how can anyone say that his motive was clearly commercial?
Because of the application of the analysis in tax tax analyst case.
Well, tax analyst was very different from this case. Tax analyst was...
I believe that the differences in tax analyst, if Your Honor, would favor the government's position. I mean, in tax analyst, under that factor, the commercial interest was found to be existent, even though they were engaged in a much more traditionally journalistic enterprise, which looked much more like the dissemination of information that FOIA is about. Keep in mind here that the record does not indicate, as Mr. Lazar acknowledged in his argument, that the information sought was disseminated in the book.
Well, in fact, that was the second factual finding I wanted to ask you about.
Mm-hmm.
The district court found that it was, and that's impossible, correct? Because
I believe that's right, Your Honor, yes.
Yeah, so we have two, at least in my mind, questionable fact findings here.
Well,
let's
error on that clearly favors the government, yeah. Your Honor, and
well,
I believe it's necessary to reach that.
Let's stick with the tax analyst, okay? This was true, was it not? This was a magazine with paid subscribers.
That's right.
Okay. The FOIA request had yielded documents that were commercially profitable to the petitioner in that case, correct?
As I understand, yes. Yeah. They were in the business of publishing the opinions.
They didn't need the incentive of the fees, right? Whereas here, this is your quintessential FOIA case. This is a person with a scholarly interest.
Can I
finish my question?
Sure.
Yeah. This is a person with a scholarly interest in government documents that he wishes to obtain, analyze, and disclose to the public. And it's an individual who has no funds and who, according to the record, made virtually nothing off of his work here. So, I mean, it seems to me to be a quintessential FOIA case. This is the kind of case Congress seems to have been talking about.
If I may, Your Honor, it has the potential for that, but there are significant failures of evidence that are his responsibility because he bears the burden. For example, whether he's a scholar. Point two.
Did you challenge that?
He does not establish it, Your Honor.
The government doesn't challenge it.
He did not allege that he was a scholar in the traditional sense of a scholar.
All the statute requires for attorney's fees is that you have a all he has to do is allege a, quote, public benefit from the documents, right? That's standard one.
That's the first factor.
And he's alleged that, and you don't challenge that.
But
in fact, you lost in the district court on that.
We do challenge that, Your Honor. That's the one factor that we do challenge in our brief.
You say it's not the documents, it's the litigation.
Exactly. We don't challenge the public value of the information, but that's not sufficient to win the first factor.
But, I mean, there your argument is simply you're focusing on the second request.
No one...
Well, that's right, Your Honor, but that's the second request is what
theory,
the case is about.
I know, but, I mean, at least I know the Senate report suggests you can look at the content.
Under your theory, nobody would be entitled to fees. right?
That's not correct, Your Honor.
If you focus on, if the documents are in the public interest, you don't challenge that. But the litigation isn't?
The litigation didn't net the documents. It wasn't that he had to, you need to perform the analysis that is performed in the cases like tax analysts, which compare the position offered up by the government at the beginning with the end result of the case. And here, at the beginning, faced with the second FOIA request, the government readily conceded to produce all documents.
Only after there was a stipulated order. It's a stipulated order that made him a prevailing party in Davey 1.
Well, perhaps we're quibbling about semantics. The stipulated means they agreed to it.
But that's my point. How can your in Davey 1, the court held that the requester was entitled to fees because of the order, correct?
That's right.
That's what made him eligible. So the government's theory is that by complying with that order, he became ineligible for fees?
No, Your Honor. Part of the government's position, this may help, is that it's not, that the eligibility and entitlement should not be conflated. In other words, because he has been deemed to have substantially prevailed by having an order, which, by the way, does not go to which documents are to be produced or not produced, it goes to when and only when, that should not be conflated with either the results of the litigation or the fourth factor, the reasonableness of the government's position. It's a separate analysis. And so, as Mr. Davey has argued on appeal, with respect to the first and fourth factor, the implication is that since he has substantially prevailed, since he has moved the government, that this means that he should be deemed to have prevailed on the first and fourth factors. And that conflates the two tests. And it's not consistent with tax analysts.
Position on the fourth factor.
Yeah.
The fourth factor? The fourth factor, Your Honor, looks at the reasonableness of the withholdings. There were no withholdings. And so, as a matter of FOIA, serving the interest of FOIA, the government's position was as reasonable as it could have been.
Can that be used for timing purposes of the withholding? Not, we're going to give it to you, but it's going to take us 3 years?
That's what the cases that speak of recalcitrance and obdurate behavior would go to, Your Honor. And here, if the first FOIA request were part of the litigation, then perhaps that would be a relevant road to go down, but it is not in this case.
So under the government's theory, then, if a requester meets the first three standards, that is, he's seeking the documents in the public interest and it's not commercial, and the government resists, the person sues, there's a consent decree under which the government then produces the documents according to the schedule, then the plaintiff is not eligible for fees?
I would submit that we would probably need a little bit more information to make the determination,
well,
but it would be well within the...
Tell me what else you would need.
How long the entire thing took,
Take this case, for example. The government did produce the document according to the stipulated schedule.
Right, which was a relatively short time
period.
Okay,
so that's part of my hypothetical.
Mm-hmm. Then I think that the fourth factor would be dispositive.
So then the government could the government could force people, almost everybody has to sue under FOIA. Let me finish. Almost everybody has to sue under FOIA to get their documents. The government, in most cases, just doesn't respond. So people who really want their documents go to court. That forces the government to make a decision, which is, are you going to defend it or are you just going to enter a stipulated order and turn the documents over? So people who really want their documents, they're going to be forced to go to court. The government will enter a stipulated decree and turn over the documents and argue that the plaintiff is not entitled to fees. That seems to me to defeat the purposes of the fee-shifting requirement.
But, Your Honor, the first answer to that is that there's no forcing one way or another. It's a discretionary decision by the district court. There's latitude for the district court to take these considerations into account.
But what troubles me about that is that if there is that kind of discretion, it sounds to me like district courts would have discretion to deny fees to a legitimately, scholarly, non-commercial researcher seeking documents in the public interest who has to go to court to get them. Under your theory, the court could deny fees under those circumstances.
Well, if it were a relatively simple process to go to court to get the documents, it might make sense.
But wouldn't it just mean that if it was relatively simple, that the fees would be lower? You wouldn't, but why would you, doesn't denying the fees eviscerate the purpose of the fee-shifting provision,
which was
to give people an incentive to bring these cases?
I don't agree with that, Your Honor. Part of the frustration, I think, with the particular test that's been adopted, as Judge Randolph referred to here, I think gets back to one of the lines of questions that you asked to Mr. Davies' counsel, which was, is the resources of the requester relevant?
Yeah, what do you think about that?
Well, I think it probably should be, but I don't see how it
fits. I agree with you.
But I don't write the test, and I don't see that it fits within the test.
Even if the resources were relevant, it wouldn't affect this case.
Well, right. For several reasons, yes, Your Honor, that's right. One is that there isn't a record.
So what's your answer to my question to your colleague there about, suppose we were to agree with him, would we have to remand for rebalancing, or could we just, what would we do?
Yes, Your Honor, it's the district court's role to perform the discretionary decision.
What could the district court say if we thought that the clearly commercial fact-finding was an abuse of discretion or clear error or clearly erroneous or whatever the standard is, what could the district court say to deny fees that would not be an abuse of discretion?
Well, I would, I don't know the answer in complete, Your Honor, or what occurs to me offhand is that the district court might reasonably ask for additional evidence on particular aspects of whether the information is going into the book that is in the record now, whether it's going to some other book, if so, when, how big a part of the book will it be. These are things that would illuminate the potential for a commercial interest and also just sort of more generally the context of what makes it commercial versus scholarly. The evidence here in the record, I would submit, is deficient, and that certainly should not be something that the government would be penalized for. I think the ultimate decision of the district court was well within its discretion.
Okay.
Thank you.
If there are no further questions, we'd ask that the judgment be affirmed. Thank you.
Mr. Lessard, you're out of time, but we'll give you 1 minute.
If the court has any questions, I'll be happy to answer them. Otherwise, I'll